and welcome into the Who's On podcast here, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. As always, you can follow the Sabre.com all year long for the latest analysis, feature stories, the message board, all covering the Wahoos. And you can find the Who's On podcast on Apple or Spotify, wherever you find your podcast today. I've got a former ACC Player of the Year, two-time Pro Bowler. This is a weird one. Last NFL quarterback to win a game in Tokyo. And the final member of the Virginia Sports Radio team to join the Who's On podcast here, it is Matt Schaub. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Preston. Thanks for having me on.
Good. All right.
I haven't had that reference, though, in my bio or an intro for anything about the Tokyo Bowl. So appreciate you recognizing that.
I was going through and I was like, what's one weird one to throw him off a little bit? Because I know you get the ACC Player of the Year, you get the Pro Bowls and all that stuff. But had to throw you off a little bit. All right, Matt Schaub, in his first season with the Virginia Sports Radio team covering Virginia and all these games, you've done two games now, Richmond and Clemson. You're going into your third one now with UNC at home this week. What has this, you know, kind of been like for you just early on?
It's been super fun. What a great experience. I mean, working with John Freeman and Ahmad Hawkins, who's a former teammate of mine. We overlapped 2 years when I first got to Charlottesville back in 1999. So our familiarity has been great as analysts to just ping pong off of one another and our knowledge of the game and knowledge of the team. And John's great play-by-play. So being a part of that team and being part of the game and back in Charlottesville, a place that, you know, is near and dear to my heart, you know, it's just super fun experience. Learning the ins and outs of a broadcast, right? I've not done, other than doing interviews on the radio, I've not done play-by-play or broadcasting in general. So a great experience of learning the flow of the game and working off of John's cues and him calling the game, but us providing our insight into what's happening on the field, but also the subtle this of radio, right? The listeners aren't seeing anything. It's radio. So being able to convey what's happening to paint the picture for the listener. And that's something that constantly working on in our preparation and specifically my own preparation as I go through the week, knowing a lot about the current team, but also this is cool because I've done the Clemson game last week and having my first back-to-back in UNC this week, being able to turn the page much like we do as players and doing the scouting report on the opponent to know what they do well and know how our team's going to kind of attack them and that back and forth. It takes me back to my days as a player. And so that, you know, being able to scratch that itch has been really cool, but it's just awesome to be a part of the team.
Well, we do have a listener question from John F. in Charlottesville. He wanted to know who was your favorite play-by-play broadcaster that you've worked with.
I mean, if that wasn't just a subtle, like, we know who that is. I mean, I got to go with my current teammate, John Freeman. You know, I think that one many would probably be tricked to go back to my playing days. And, you know, Mac McDonald was the play-by-play announcer, but, you know, it's John Freeman. I mean, why not?
All right. He'll be happy with that. I said that he might make top five. I'm not sure, you know, where your rankings would be, but he might make top five. I wanted real quick, you know, we met about 2 years ago at a job fair with Virginia football. And I told you something. I don't know if you remember it, but I'm an Atlanta Falcons fan. I don't know if you remember how I became an Atlanta Falcons fan, but I was looking for an NFL team. My dad had grown up a Redskins fan, and I just, you know, at the time, it wasn't a very appealing option. So I'm looking around and I see, all right, Matt Schaub gets drafted by the Atlanta Falcons. I'll give this a shot. So that's kind of how I started becoming a Falcons fan. You told me that, are you sure it wasn't because of Michael Vick? And I'm sure, yeah, you know, that was part of it. Sure. Really fun player.
No, exciting to, you know, obviously, but, you know, imagine my surprise being drafted by the Atlanta Falcons, knowing Michael Vick was QB1 and obviously Virginia Tech, Virginia, there's that, but I mean, we're wildly different quarterbacks and everything and contrast each other. But so I was like, man, I need to go out and get a little faster here before I report to camp from the draft. But we're glad to have you as Atlanta Falcon fan.
What was the 40 back in the day?
Not fast enough, but fast enough to get away from the first guy. Most D tackles had a problem. I mean, it was 4.9 plus. I was sub 5.0, which was good. That's all I wanted to do when I ran the 40 at the combine, just be under 5 and move along.
It's been a pretty good year for the Falcons so far. I know they took a loss last week against Seattle, but pretty good, coming up in the Raheem Morris era. But let's get back to Virginia. That's what we're all here for. How has just this job kind of matched your expectations going into it? I know you've got some guys that you can talk to and lean on, for kind of, what it's like.
Yeah, it's hard. The questions I've asked from friends or people I've known in the football world or sports world in general in the broadcasting field, both as a former player, teammates, but also those that have been doing it for 20 plus years, is about the preparation, about how they get themselves ready for the game, for the broadcast, because there's so much information and you can get overwhelmed by that. It can end up, if you have too much, then you know nothing, right? And you want to be able to have enough information to explain the teams and the players on the field, while using your knowledge from your experiences of what is actually taking place, right? So being able to sift through that and knowing what's the most important stuff for the job, for the broadcast, that has been, something that I've really taken away. Because if you try to take all the information and all the experience, you got to go through it, in my opinion. You can get overwhelmed, and that can bog you down, and then you have analysis by paralysis, and you say nothing. You have no information. So that for me is where my focus has been, and just going through it and just leaning on, John and just and Ahmad, is talking about, leading up to the game Monday, Wednesday, tomorrow, before the weekend comes, and just being prepped for that, and just, going through that experience, each week, I'll re-listen to the game and try to hone in on some of my deliveries, what I'm actually conveying. If I'm the listener, am I understanding what Matt's saying? Like, that's what I'm really trying to do. But you can get bogged down if you try to take in too much advice. But just listening and being like, am I getting my job right?
It's a different kind of film study now.
It is. It's well, there's film study, both of Virginia's team and the opponent, but also it's putting an earpiece in and listening to a 3, sometimes 4 hour broadcast to make sure, hey, how am I sounding? How's my voice inflection? It's wildly different than what you do when you're just watching a soundless video of plays.
All right, you mentioned the crossover between you and the ball hawk, Ahmad Hawkins. Any good ball hawk stories from back in the day?
Gosh, back in the day, like as a player, I mean, Hawk was, he was a great veteran to learn from. Such an approachable guy. And he was someone that really liked going to the young guys and taking them under their wing and trying to, show them how things are done, right? When you're coming into Virginia as a first year, from high school, things are so different. And okay, how do we assimilate to the team, to the culture of the Cavalier program? And he was a guy, that you could easily go to, and he would give you his advice and what he had learned from his experience. At that time, he was a receiver. So for me, as a quarterback coming in, I was like, yeah, I want to know this guy. I want to go and find out what it's like to be a Virginia Cavalier. Being from Pennsylvania, I didn't know a ton about Virginia other than a couple players from my area were recruited the year before me, and prior to that, in Arlen Harris, Dan Ellis, who was a quarterback before me. So didn't really know much about Virginia football. And he was definitely one of those leaders that you could go to and learn the ropes.
Was he pulling out the George Welsh impression back then? Okay.
Yes, there was a lot of players that did, and it was easy to do. And I know George would
Was
be
his the
looking down, and
best, or
he,
was.
it was up there. It was top five. Let me give you that. I'm not going to be able to give you who was number one, but he was definitely top five.
Okay. going for you got. Your first game on the broadcast, y'all had a long delay, and I've had Ball Hawk on, I've had John on to talk about that delay and just what y'all did for the hours to kind of fill the time. What was that like? I feel like you emptied your bag of stories on the first go.
Well, there's many more stories to come, but to be on a broadcast, some of them weren't listener friendly, family friendly, but we did. And I mean, what a way to go start off, right? First game. And I think we're on the air for 7+ hours when it was all said and done. But fortunately, I had nothing to get to that night. It was just fly out the next
No
day.
dinner
But
reservations, yeah.
no dinner, no plans. But definitely, it was cool because we got more time to talk back and forth, the three of us, because it was other than a scrimmage during August camp, when I came up into town and we did a mock broadcast. That was our first time on air as, partners and as a team. And so to not only call the game, but then have that lull and just have conversation and get to know one another a little bit more in this space was really cool. And also for the listeners, I know it was probably a long time for someone to be listening to the radio to find out what's going to happen in this game that we're already winning by a few scores. For them to get to know us as a team and get to hear our voices and, just to connect a little bit more. It was a long game, but fortunately the Hoos won, so that was a nice reason to stay on the air.
There you go. All right, let's get into just this year's team and kind of first, just your overall thoughts. Like you said, this is unique for you because now you get to see them against Clemson and kind of go into the next game and kind of carry that over. What have you just made of where Tony Elliott has this team at 4-3 right now, 2-2 in the ACC going into this week, and a big rivalry game against North Carolina?
Yeah, obviously, when it becomes North Carolina week, things ratchet up a little bit. I mean, it's anything short of Virginia Tech, right? And its approach during the week and the mindset. But I really like where the team's at. I know that lately the injury bugs kind of hit a little bit, and that's the key, factor when you go through a football season for any team at any level is, what is the injury situation and status? You want to stay as healthy as possible, but it's a fact of life in this game that you're going to have injuries. But I really like the tone that Tony Elliott has set this season and the approach by the team. And, they have a lot of older veteran players that are on this football team. And I like the way Anthony Calandria has stepped up in his second season and really led the football team since he took control at the end of camp and was named the starter. I love his skill set and what he can do. I really, there's a lot of pieces to like to this football team, and it's just getting over that hump and sitting at 4-3. Everything is in front of them. I know the 2 weeks ago, the game against Louisville there at home got away. That was one, man, if we could have picked that one up and now been sitting here at 5-2, it's a different ball game going forward. But hey, everything's right in front, and it starts with Carolina, bitter rivalry. I mean, the South's oldest one, right? And so there's a different approach when the baby blue comes into town, and we can't let this one slip away. But I think that the tone that the coaching staff and the leaders on this team, and you talk about the defense, Jonas Anker and the way he plays. You saw him against Clemson when the game was in hand, right? He was still playing hard, and the physicality that he brought on the last couple series, anyone on that team can just turn on the tape. And if your best player and most, credited player is still playing hard in a game like that, then why can't all of us, and why can't all of us just have that same approach that he has day in and day out? And that's what you want from your leaders. And so I know that this week in practice, the minds are going to be right. They're going to reset their jaw from last week and take care of business this week against Carolina.
Well, we can't have the quarterback on without talking about the quarterback and Anthony Calandria. Just what have you seen from him this year? Obviously, his first year as the full-time starter. He's got 11 touchdowns, four interceptions. He's gone four straight games without an interception. It's been since the Maryland game since he's turned it over. What have you seen from him? I know I asked Tony Elliott on Tuesday, just what did has he found a balance between, not making those plays where you turn the ball over, and between, still taking enough shots down the field. And he said that's something they're still kind of working with the balance. They are encouraging him to take those chances still. But what have you kind of made of where he's found himself?
I really like his growth. You watch the games he played last year, and he took advantage of an opportunity that was given to him, at the behest of an injury to Tony Musket. It's unfortunate, but it gave him an opportunity to play as a first year player. And I think that really gave him a jump start on this season. And what you see is, even from fall camp into this year, is his maturity and his play, his using his head and understanding situations and when to throw it away, when to live to fight for another down, when he's running, when to protect himself, get out of bounds, or avoid taking a hit and try to, knife for a first down, get down, dive, avoid those hits. Because he has, and I understand it, he's such a great athlete. And I think that's what everyone appreciates is his ability to create with his legs and still be able to throw the football down the field when he leaves the pocket. That's one of his greatest strengths. So why not utilize it? But also, there's a way to harness that and not be overly aggressive, especially early in the game where you're taking too many chances. You want him to take chances because when you have a guy like Malachi Fields down there, he can make you look good and he can make some plays over some DBs that others can't with his size. So why not take those chances? But I really like where AC's plays at his head. You saw it against Clemson, handling that environment, not having any pre-snap penalties, taking care of the football. And we saw it time and time again that, he wasn't putting it at risk in the air, in the passing game, like you would normally see from a second-year player in that environment. That's what that place does to quarterbacks. The one thing, and I know he'd tell you, is just being aware when you leave the pocket of where you're trying to get rid of the football, especially going to your left. He's had a fumble or two moving that way because that ball's exposed to chasing defensive linemen, and those guys are pretty fast in their own right. Is just knowing when to protect yourself and protect the football, more importantly.
It's interesting you mentioned Malachi Fields. I got an article coming out on the saber.com about Malachi Fields and Jonas Saker, just kind of the unique situation we got with, two hometown guys that are kind of have risen to be like the best player on both sides of the ball. But Anthony Calandri had a quote in there, and he said, "There's no 50-50 balls when you're throwing down the field to Malachi Fields. It's 100% ball." And that's kind of what it feels like with Malachi this season. All right, I want to get right before we're going to go into the UNC preview right after the break, but before we get there, just something you like on this team outside of the quarterback, just something that you like about, is it offense, defense, something there?
It's hard to point to one specific thing. I think it's just you can see the mindset of the coach and the tone that he has set going into year three. I mean, this program has, as we all know, has seen its challenges and its trials and tribulations, both on the field but off the field as well. To have had a chance as a program to digest all of that and then, set the record straight this year, and start fresh. You can see that. You can see the determination on the field in their preparation, but and it comes to light on the field. What I really do like, and to be honest, if I had to point some out, and this is interesting coming from a quarterback, but I love what's going on in the trenches, on the offensive line and defensive line. I think a priority on both sides of the football was running it and stopping the run defensively. And those numbers are much improved from last season to this season. And that's where you see a lot of the ball control and you see a lot of the balance, both offensively but defensively. They're giving their back end a chance on third down because they're forcing teams into passing situations. That's a credit to those guys up front who are healthy now. There was a lot of injuries last year, and I think that has helped. And the offensive line, again, is healthy, and they've played together a lot of football. But you're seeing them be able to give Kobe Pace and Xavier Brown some holes to run in. So I really like what's going on in the trenches because that's been a strong point of Virginia football for decades now. And to get back to having those two things work in concert, it gives you a chance as a football team to find yourself on the right side of the scoreboard on Saturdays.
All right, well, we are going to come back in just a second and get into a preview of the South Soulless rivalry against North Carolina. A couple injury updates there as well, and just kind of get into this matchup. We'll be right back here on the Who's On podcast. Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. My guest is Matt Schaub, a color commentator for the Virginia Sports Radio Network. We have got North Carolina this week, the South's oldest rivalry. Matt, I dug up some stats real quick. During your career, you were 4-1 against UNC, and I believe 2-1 as a starter. Memories from those games against the Tar Heels. I know one that comes to mind for me is the 2002 game at home at Scott Stadium. Y'all were down 21-0 at halftime, and you came back to win that game. Believe it or not, that was actually my first college football game I ever attended. And so I was like, this is pretty. I went from, this is terrible, I don't want to go to these games anymore, to, oh, this is actually really fun. What do you remember about that game back in 2002?
Well, before I get into that one, 2001 playing there in Carolina was really cool. I mean, to go in and line up. You had Julius Peppers on the edge playing defensive end, who we all know what type of player he was on the football field and basketball court, mind you, but who just got inducted in the NFL Hall of Fame. But To go down there and play against him, and Dre Bly was there, and others, it was a cool experience in Chapel Hill. But yeah, 2002, we found ourselves in a hole at halftime, and we dug it, and their offense was able to move up and down the field, and offensively we couldn't get much done. But I remember Marcus Weeks opening that second half kickoff for a touchdown. Forget how long it was, 100 yards or whatever it was just a huge catalyst and spark for a football team. When you're in that type of game, you're just looking for one spark, whether it be a return, a big catch, a big run, an interception on defense, and then things start clicking. And that's what happened to us. I mean, the defense shut down their offense, and then offensively, we were just dialing up winning plays after winning plays. And I do remember, I think I had one of my career-long runs against North Carolina in that game. I think it was something like a, I don't, it felt like a 60-yard run, but it was probably only a 25-yarder. But it felt like I was running forever. But man, it was such a good, those type of games when you can find your way back and win those. I mean, it makes it even sweeter when you're able to fight back from a deficit like that.
Yeah. All right, looking at this game right now, Tony Elliott talked to the media on Tuesday and gave some updates. Antonio Clary, Dre Walker both practiced this week. He's hopeful they will be back against UNC. Ty Furnish and is out. James Jackson, the linebacker, game time decision. He missed that Clemson game, of course. And then Trell Harris out for a couple more weeks still after his knee injury. Antonio Clary, just getting him back, what would that mean for this defense?
That'd be huge. I mean, what an untimely, unfortunate injury for him, with the season that he was putting together. I mean, what a, to me, looking at the ACC, probably the best tandem of safeties through halfway through the season between Antonio Clary and Jonas Sanker. Both of them finding plays, coming down to support the run, being able to cover, and they were erasers. When teams would find themselves getting to the second level in the run game, they were on an island. And he's such a good tackler. They're both smart veteran players, so to get him back would be huge. Just for that back end to be able to communicate calls, adjustments, and just get everyone lined up, especially without James Jackson, if he's not able to play. Having those guys, Trey McDonald's filled in quite nicely, and Cam Robinson's played hard. I know he fought through last week in a big way for the team. You could tell he was visibly not good, but he was able to still suck it up for his football team. So to have those safeties with their experience, be able to set everyone up and get them aligned and get the adjustments would be huge for this defense.
I did want to add, Dorian Jones is a guy who missed last week because of family matters. Dylan Elliott said he's going to be back this week. So it'll be kind of a mix between Jones, McDonald, and Robinson, kind of playing those two linebacker spots, kind of alternating out without James Jackson. One other interesting one, and I know you were down at Clemson, so you saw this in person. Ben Smiley, he was not ejected. Tony Elliott sent him to the locker room, so there's no suspension for him after kind of the little skirmish that he got in with one of the Clemson players. Have you ever seen that? A player kind of get into something and he's not ejected, but the coach sends him to the locker room. Did George Welch ever do that? Al Groh, did you ever see that in your playing days?
Not that I recall, not that a coach decided to dismiss a player from the sideline and send him to the locker room, but it was an unfortunate circumstance that took place, especially at the point in the game that it was in, because Ben was coming in and he's such an emotional player and he's such a high motor physical player, and you could see the juice that he brought to the defense. It was a long game, it was hot, and they needed fresh bodies to be able to defend the run, and he came in and he was playing hard. But knowing the fine line between that and bringing that emotion and energy to maintaining your composure, no matter what's going on or what's happening between the whistles or under piles. I'm not saying anything that was taking place was okay,
No.
but you got to be able to, for your team's sake and for your accountability of the guys in the huddle, maintain your composure. So I understand what Tony was doing and trying to calm things down, because once you get up and you're starting to push and fight with your own teammates, and they reach that level of intensity, the best thing to do is just remove that person from the environment and let them cool off, and then have a conversation about it afterwards, which I'm sure Tony did. I'm sure the position coaches did. I'm sure some of the leaders on the team also talked to Ben. I mean, he's a veteran player too. He's a graduate student, been around a number of years. So I'm sure that's all been put to rest, but not something, especially in that situation at that time of the game, that you want to see transpire in any way.
Yeah. And Ben Smiley did an article with him a couple of weeks ago because he's one of two players left from that Orange Bowl team for Virginia. It's just him and Antonio Clary left. So one of the few players that's experienced getting to the postseason and what really success looks like at Virginia. So be interested to see what he does the rest of the year. All right. Turning to UNC now. There's a lot of good running backs in the ACC this year, and you got one of the best ones coming to Charlottesville this weekend with Amarian Hampton, who leads the ACC in rushing right now. The last couple of weeks, we mentioned the improvement in the trenches against the run this year, but the last couple of weeks against Louisville and Clemson, you faced two really good ground attacks and two good backs, and Isaac Brown from Louisville, Phil Mafah from Clemson. How do you slow down Amarian Hampton, kind of the key to their offense at this point?
I think the big thing is going to be eye discipline for the defense and the health of the guys. I think the linebacking core to begin with them is going to be huge. And being in the right place, being gap fundamentally sound, I think really the onus falls on the defensive line, though. And they really have to maintain the line of scrimmage, and get some penetration, but really keep the linebackers clean to make plays and keep the hopefully Antonio Clary's playing and Jonas Anker being able to come down and run support and be able to, stop that run because Hampton he's number five in the nation in rushing, not only leading the ACC, but number five. And their team as a whole, just like Carolina, averaging about two or Clemson the week before, 200 yards a game. So we need to really chomp into that bit and not allow that to happen. He's a good back. And he's going to get his yards, but you can't have the big runs. You can't have the 20 plus yard runs. He's going to get his 5, 6 yard runs, but let's not let those turn into 15 plus, 20 plus yard runs. And then be ready for the play action pass off of that because everyone's going to focus and have their keys on him, just like Mafah last week with Clemson, but be able to still be in our right spot in the secondary for some of the play action passes that they're going to attempt to throw. But it's all going to start with the run. You got to eliminate that and make them throw the football. That's the key to the game for the defense.
Flip side on defense for Carolina. And it was funny, I was talking to a UNC fan earlier this week, and we're talking about, you think back to their game against Minnesota to start the year, it's like, oh, this defense actually looks really improved. And now, and then a couple of weeks later, they're giving up 70 points to JMU. They're giving up 30 points on the season as a defense. Where do you kind of focus, or where do you think this attack for UVA, where do you think they should go at this UNC defense?
Well, I think you need to confirm all doubt in the minds of all the defenders on the Carolina side about what's going through their mind. And they have a lot of doubt. And I think Anthony Calandria in this offense needs to confirm that from the first play. Don't even give them any confidence whatsoever. And I think you run the football, you play action them, and then when you have to drop back, you just give your guys a chance to make some plays. But pre-snap, what I see on film when I look at Carolina, there's a lot of communication, and they have a hard time getting set up, especially when there's pre-snap window dressing, whether it's motions, shifts, different formations, whether you're in stacks or bunches, where they have to communicate how they want to play their coverages, and then you can snap the football, and they're not ready. They have a hard time getting lined up. And I think that's something that Des Kitchens and the offensive staff can put together some packages where they can take advantage of that. But really, I mean, it's been you take your choice what you want to do offensively against them. Now they have got a lot of good athletes and they're good players when you just line up and want to play. But if you can instill that doubt in the first series that, hey, what you've shown on tape, you haven't got that corrected. I think it could be a big day for this offense. And if they just take care of the football and just keep playing the way they've been playing, they're going to find a lot of big plays on Saturday.
We've seen it kind of, go back and forth. That first drive for Virginia this season, sometimes it's scripted to perfection. They go down the field, they score a touchdown, and sometimes it kind of goes the other way, like you saw against in the Boston College game. It took them a little bit to get going, but against Louisville, it was perfect. You went straight down the field, marched down the field, got a touchdown. Even Clemson early on, you're playing well and kind of moving the ball. So, be interesting to see how they start out against UNC. All right, time for predictions. Player to watch for this game. I'll go first, just because we've talked about it a little bit. It's if Antonio Clary is back there at safety. Or if it's Corey Thomas, who they moved back to that safety position from the spur position last week, you just need a sure tackler there. You need someone that can get their run fits, be in the right position against this UNC ground attack, because that's what it seems like. So much is funneled to these safeties, so much is expected of Jonas Sanker and Antonio Clear or whatever safety it is to come down in the box and make those tackles. So that's kind of where I'm going to be watching this game. Is there a player that you're kind of watching for this game?
Yeah, I look at the running backs. I love what I've seen from that tandem of Kobe Pace and Xavier Brown. I'd like to see them maintain that. And I'd like to see 100 yards out of both of them. I think it's out there. I think the opportunities for big plays in the run game for this Virginia offense is there. I really like the juice that both of them bring, especially Xavier Brown. He has a change of pace. Him coming in, they're both physical runners. And I love how they complement one another. So I really see the ground attack really imposing their will on this defense. And then from there, the passing game can do what they want, play action and drop back to Malachi. Another player, it seems like whenever he does make a play, there's a penalty or something happens. But Chris Tyree, who
Yeah.
we're just waiting for him to really burst into a game and have some big explosive plays. I think he's primed for it. We saw a couple bubble screens and things the other day against Clemson that worked, but then one was called back, a 12-yard game was called back. But then he had a couple catches late in the fourth quarter. I'd like to see him get a couple opportunities early in the game. And I think that really opens up a lot of the passing game for other players when he can make some plays in the slot.
Yeah, it was funny. I was texting someone right after that play happened and it got called back. And I was like, he just can't catch a break with guys, holding on the edge. I think Malachi Fields did it against Maryland. And then this last game was Andre Green on the edge. If he could get that block, if he gets some room, like he's got big play ability. And Tony Elliott's talked about too, just with his speed. And you're missing Trel Harris right now, the kind of one guy that can take the top off a defense, maybe using him in that role a little bit. And so maybe they'll try some more with Chris Tyree. But yeah, he's one I've kind of always had a he's always my like my permanent player to watch every game because I'm like I'm just waiting for it to
It's gonna
happen
happen.
one of these days. All
He's
right.
gonna make you right one week.
One week. All right. Predictions. I don't know if you get into predictions. UVA is a 4.5 point favorite. The over-under for this game, 59 and a half. That's a lot of points. And they're expecting a lot of points. That's why I'm going UVA 37-31. If you don't want to make a prediction, just kind of what kind of game do you think we're going to get?
I'm not too far off when you just said that. I didn't know you were going to play the prediction game, but the first numbers that popped into my head, and generally I don't, but I had 38-21 pop into
Okay.
my head, Virginia. Now that's what I'll think. And I think the offense is going to have a big day. And I think the defense is going to find some opportunistic turnovers, and it's going to be a lot of fun on Saturday.
See, I think almost all of my predictions this year have involved 38 points in some way. So I've tried to like, all right, I'm not doing 38 again. I'll do something different. last week I did call them to cover against Clemson. I thought they were going to get some late scores there, and they did that. Although there's some shenanigans there at the end with, Dabo and Tony going back and forth with the offense
Yeah, I don't
because.
know. When we got it down under the initial line, and Klubnik went back in, they threw that touchdown to go back up. I forget it was like 22 or something like that.
Yeah.
Off air, I looked at the guys. I'm like, if there was something, a little buzzer that went off in his head and said, "We need to cover," and that's why he did that. But yeah, there was definitely an interesting last 5 minutes to that football game for
Some
sure.
style points for the college football playoff scores, I guess. I
Yeah.
don't know if it made it on to Scott Van Pelt's bad beats, but it definitely was one, just the way it was going back and forth there towards the end. One other prediction, Scott Stadium attendance, and we heard Tony Elliott talk about his message to the fans saying we're all in this together. It takes all of us. It's kind of been a little up and down this season. Just kind of what would you say to fans just about, coming out, especially for a game like this in the South Silver's rivalry?
Yeah, I think that it's been a few years running, right? I think that that's been kind of the trend with fan turnout. And I don't know there's an explanation. I know there's a lot to be said about noon games, and it's kind of an early wake up and things like that. But fans got to show up. I just remember back in the early 2000s when we were playing, and it was a packed house and raucous. The hill was packed. There was an empty seat. It was 60,000 plus week in, week out. I mean, if we had a bad turnout, it was 55, 57. But the fans, the team needs you. They need your support. I know there's a lot going on. People have lives and things to do, but to carve out 3.5, 4 hours to come support the Hoos, I mean, it's such an incredible place to play when it's packed. Fans come out and support the team. You know, they're doing as much as they can in the community, and that's one thing that's so great about this football team is the priority they've placed on being out, be faces in the community to show their love and support for the Charlottesville area and just fans, student section, wake up, get over to the stadium, get to Scott Stadium. It's right down the road. You can walk. Trust me, I know. But show up for this team, and you know, they'll show up for you too.
I was gonna add, as not being a UVA student, didn't go there, was there a different kind of culture on grounds, just like students? Like, was it more of an expectation back then? Just kind of, it's interesting, just kind of hearing some of the different, reasonings that people have. And I've always been kind of like, I don't care about kickoff times. I don't care about, I think ticket prices are pretty much the same across the country.
Yeah.
So I don't buy into a lot of those excuses, but just like culturally, what'd you see back then versus now?
Well, it's hard for me to speak. I haven't been on grounds as a student or walked around to get the pulse of the community there. But you know, back my lived experience back then, yeah, everyone was fired up. I mean, it'd be Wednesday and everyone walking around is talking about the upcoming game or you know what the other team's like or you know how's everything going. Like that was the talk, and you know there was a buzz. You know on Fridays. You know, when you get done, your walkthrough and you go to your class or whatever if you have on Friday, but then you're getting ready and everyone's kind of the week's kind of done, right? Everyone was excited about the game the next day and trying to do whatever they can on Friday. Let me get done a bunch of stuff so I can have my Saturday clear. That was where a lot of people had their minds at the end of the week, getting ready for the football game.
All right. Well, that is Matt Schaub, the color commentator for Virginia Sports Radio Network. Of course, you know him as former quarterback for Virginia, number 7. Matt, thanks for coming on the Who's On podcast. It's a pleasure talking to you. And now we can say that you've joined the likes of John Freeman and Ahmad Hawkins here.
I'm honored for that, and thanks for having me on, Preston. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right. That is it for the Who's On podcast. We will see you after the UNC game next week. For a recap and also looking ahead to some basketball coming up right around the corner. And of course, so much to talk about there with everything that's been going on. But that is it for the Who's On podcast. We'll see you next week.